Welcome to In It to Win It. This is Steve Barton, and thank you for tuning in. And as you can probably tell by my background, we are back with Justin Huhn from the Uranium Insider. Justin, thanks for coming back on the show.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I remember the last time we were on, I was talking about how I had recently gotten a stimulus check, and I kind of half jokingly said that I think the next step is going to be price fixing and price controls. And I read in the newspaper today that Nancy Pelosi is trying to push through a price fixing on gasoline. And so I think I was right a lot sooner than I actually thought I would be. And I kind of wanted to get your opinion. We'll deep dive into uranium here, but I kind of want to get your picture of what is your view the global economy, and maybe kind of dial that in a little bit into energy, and just where do you see us where we are today?
I would say that's pretty complicated, and I'm not necessarily a global macro expert, but I don't think things look very stable at the moment. But I'm also not really in the doomsday camp that we're about to fall off a cliff into absolute global financial mayhem. I think that, and the reason I believe that is because I believe that much of what we're seeing right now in terms of inflationary pressures due to primarily, not only increasing the money supply, but also major supply chain disruptions, that much of that is self-inflicted, coming from just the intervention for COVID by multiple various government entities around the world. And so I think a lot of what we're seeing right now is absolutely, well, whether or not it was by design, it's definitely self-inflicted. And so I honestly think the way out of that is for governments, generally speaking, to just get the heck out of the way and let capitalism run its course, for the most part, to put it very simply. It seems like the supply chain problems are worsening, not getting better at the moment. And I think that the economy is sort of on the precipice of going into a recession. I don't know how deep it will be, how long lasting it will be. The Fed in the United States seems to be hellbent on trying to do something about inflation, while at the same time doing, like you mentioned, talking about price controls. We've seen the Biden administration cancel leases for oil and gas exploration in certain areas. We've obviously seen Biden on, week one of his presidency cancel the Keystone Pipeline. So raising rates to curb inflation, I don't know how well that's going to work if the supply side for oil and gas, which essentially, drives the economy and is a major, major input cost for basically everything. The supply side is going to be inhibited by these measures. How is raising rates, 50 basis points, 100 basis points going to actually bring inflation down? But, the markets are reacting to the hawkishness of the Fed. And what seems to be happening right now in terms of the markets is everyone seems to be placing a bet on how soon will the Fed pivot dovish? And so there's people that think, oh, they're already done. During the next rate hike, they're going to pull back. Maybe they'll do 50 basis points in June, which I think the markets are already pricing in, and they're going to soften from there. And some people are thinking they have to keep going because it's the only tool they have to combat inflation, and the markets are going to keep going down. I think I'm somewhere in the middle. I think that because it's a midterm election year, I think it complicates things. I don't believe that the Fed will be willing to absolutely crash the markets in order to say that they're trying to bring inflation down. I think they have to find a middle ground. Inflation obviously hurts everyone, but it hurts the poor the most. Crashing the markets just kills the middle class. There's gotta be a middle ground there. So I believe the Fed will soften. How soon will they do it? I don't know. I don't know. So I think, long story short, and obviously this is, this podcast conversation is focusing on investing in uranium specifically, but so to wrap that all up in a market outlook, I would say that we likely have more downside in front of us, but I think we're closer to the bottom than we are to the top. So I think that the Fed will pivot probably sooner rather than later, but I don't think it's going to be tomorrow. I don't think it's going to be next week. So we could have another month or two of down to sideways, you know, type of volatile action. And I think when they do soften, whenever that happens, that's probably going to be the dollar top. And I think that metals and commodities are going to scream. So with all of that said, there's probably a bit more pain ahead, you know, gun to my head. I would guess we've got another leg down in the markets, but I think that that probably will mark a point where entries will be absolutely salivatingly attractively low. And from there, we should go on a very, very strong run. And I'm actually, all things considered, while I don't like seeing paper losses, I don't like seeing declines of 30%, 40% over the matter of 3 to 4 weeks. I almost would rather just rip the Band-Aid off and get this, you know, micro crash / small mini recession, whatever it's going to be, get it over with. And from there, I think we'll see a very, very robust run in commodities.
Yeah, Jordan's kind of saying the same thing. As far as I've been sending out these tweets and sending you little love notes like this with the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust showing a almost a 16% discount to NAV, right? I mean, this is just incredible. Have you ever seen it this discounted like that? I mean, it's not this largest, now. I think it's 5%.
That's
now.
The largest it's been for SPUT. Okay. We've seen UPC at a larger discount to NAV before.
Okay. But that's a pretty good deal, right? I mean, if you're able to buy it at like that, I mean,
for sure.
I don't know how much better of a deal you could get, right?
Yeah, no, that was the peak in terms of that was the bottom, at least in the near term, in the recent near term for SPUT. Discount to NAV was almost 16% there. It's since closed. I think we're probably more around a 6% discount to NAV, right in that ballpark. Definitely having another risk off type of day across most markets today. That was a steep discount, and that's, you know, the SPUT vehicle, they don't sell pounds in the market to buy back shares, which technically would be an accretive thing for shareholders. But, the hypothetical problem with doing that would be obviously selling those pounds in the market would put selling pressure, possibly dropping that discount to NAV, creating this whole kind of reverse flywheel or the snowball effect. So, even though if they were to sell pounds in the market at 16% discount to NAV and buy back shares, that would be a positive thing for shareholders. It would put downward pressure on the spot market, which would have a negative feedback loop situation. So I'm glad that they are kind of a buy and hold entity, and that 16% discount to NAV presents an opportunity for investors to sort of take advantage of that short-term blip.
Yeah, I did. I thought it was pretty cool. But okay, so the uranium price right now, as of this moment, it was $48.75. I think the last time we talked, it was in the low 60s. You mentioned in the last couple of your episodes that the spot price of uranium isn't as important to the sector as it might be to something like silver, right? What can you elaborate on that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it is important and it's not important. It's less important for the nuclear industry and an overall, let's say, snapshot of the health of the fuel cycle or the trend of the fuel cycle. And it's more important for the investment case because it's the most visible price reporting. It's the most frequent reported price. And it's what all the investors watch, especially the traders. I shouldn't say traders and not investors. The traders will watch every tick of the spot market. The investors will just go, meh. You know, we're watching SWU, or we're watching conversion, or we're watching the long-term, contracting market. But the spot market, you know, so for uranium, there's essentially no futures market. So what you're seeing on the screen in terms of prices is really what's happening due to supply and demand. So when we're seeing a correction in the spot price from $64 down to, I think it bottomed at 48, that's a big decline, but it doesn't mean anything in terms of the overall fuel cycle, because during that period of decline, all of the other elements of the fuel cycle are perfectly stable, in fact, rising. So this is simply the spot market is deliveries of less than 12 months. That's what qualifies a a transaction of uranium as a spot market purchase or sale. And so for the spot price to fall like that, what we're seeing is more supply than demand, really is what it comes to, what it means. And so what we've seen is SPUT has become the demand in the spot market. Now there's still pounds being traded back and forth, and that's pretty much been all of the volume for the past 4 to 5 weeks since SPUT's been at such a severe discount to NAV, or persistent discount to NAV, I should say. Dwindling their cash down. I think they're sitting on 26 million, not enough to really do any purchases. They want to keep some buffer of cash in there for G&A and whatever else they might need for moments like this where the market turns down. But with SPUT out of the market, it's been ripe for sellers who have not a lot of incentive to necessarily get the highest price possible. So one of those sellers would be BHP, for example. Their Olympic Dam mine in Australia is primarily a gold and copper mine, and uranium is sort of just a bonus material for them. And they just, most of the time they just sell that into the spot market for whatever price is being offered. So during the period when SPUT's out, the market is going to be more volatile, more ripe for price manipulation. And there are definitely entities that have an interest in seeing the spot price lower. So that might be traders that have sold pounds into the future at higher price, that they want to be able to cover those carry trade sales by covering in the spot market, and the price being lower benefits them. And with a major buyer out of the market, the price is easier to manipulate downwards. Another would be in a utility that has forward contract deliveries still on the books that are partially referenced to the market, or referenced to the spot price. So they might have paid a fixed price in years past with Cameco, with Orano, whoever it might be, $40 a pound fixed, and that'll be 60% of the contract or 40% of the contract. 60% of the contract would be referenced to the market. So at the time of delivery, 60% of that contract will be priced at whatever the spot price is at the time of delivery. So if you have a utility that has deliveries now and SPUT's out of the market, they could benefit hugely by trickling some pounds into the spot market to whatever buyer might be wanting those pounds, and bringing that price down and then paying that spot price for a portion of their contract. It's kind of a complex scenario, but long story short, the spot market really, famously, Mike Alkin from Sachem Cove, who he was one of the most vocal advocates for this investment back in, 2017, 2018. He's since kind of disappeared from Twitter, disappeared from YouTube, just kind of doing his thing with his fund. But he was always in every interview he did, he used to do a podcast, be like, spot market is noise. It doesn't matter. And he knows more about these markets than pretty much anybody. So it is very noisy. There's a lot of activity there, but it is what the speculators and traders in the uranium investment do watch. So to that extent, it matters. But as far as the big picture of the fuel cycle and the trajectory of the nuclear fuel market, the spot price is less relevant.
Okay. I remember watching an interview with Keith Neumeyer, the CEO of First Majestic Silver. And one thing he mentioned that I kind of liked a lot was he said, I can see, just like you can, that silver has been trading between $30 and $21 for the last year and a half or 2 years. And so what I do is, when the price is down closer to 21, I hoard the metal. And when it gets closer to 28 or 30, I sell it. Are there any entities like that in the uranium space that kind of do the same thing? Like maybe Kazatomprom or any of these, or do they just kind of have limited storage capacity and they just got to dump it? Or
The market itself right now is very thin, and considering what we're seeing in terms of SPUT's accumulation over the past 9 months and supply chain problems, there aren't really entities dumping pounds into the market based on storage capacity or anything like that. It's also, we're in a general uptrend for the commodity. So I don't think there's a lot of that type of price just taking advantage of those price movements, because it's less predictable than, say, Neumeyer's observation of the silver market. With that said, there are always traders. There are plenty of uranium traders that are buying low and selling high. rinse and repeat. So that is absolutely happening. That will always happen. It's slowed down, I would say, in the past year, primarily because of SPUT. The market now has a whole new mechanism in it for financial players to participate in a pretty substantive way in this market. So one of the big sources into the spot market over the past year, or I would say since SPUT's been on the scene, has been this reverse carry trade. So these are pounds that the traders have committed to delivery out into the future. Whenever they sign that contract with utilities, that carry trade, they covered by buying in the spot market. And so they're sitting on these pounds. These traders have pounds on their books and they are to deliver them, let's say 2024, for example. And that's at a fixed price that they already signed with the utility. And so if we see the market go into a substantially backwardated state, so where we'll see the spot market rise substantially above the term market, then what they'll do is these traders will sell to SPUT the pounds that they're holding that are promised for delivery to a utility. And simultaneously or slightly before they sell those pounds, they will cover by signing a midterm contract with Orano, with Uranium One, well, maybe not Uranium One now, Kazatomprom, whoever it might, the Uzbeks. And so they'll arbitrage, they'll scalp a couple of dollars off of that trade. And so that happened in a major way, late August, September, October, in a lesser way over the past few months. Now we're not really in a backwardated market currently, so it's not happening, but there's not a lot of demand with SPUT not there. So when SPUT's in the market, when the funds are flowing heavily into the space, heavily into that vehicle, that's pushing the spot price up. When it gets backwardated, it creates some supply. Supply is not endless. There's only so many pounds held in carry. That number of pounds is contended between very intelligent people in the industry. How much is there? We believe a lot of that has already been worked through this backwardation, through SPUT buying 34 million pounds in the past 8 months. So that's a major source of supply in the spot market. Besides that, the market is pretty thin. Utilities, generally speaking, right now are kind of stepping back. They're sort of sitting out. Normally the summertime is a slow period in the uranium markets. The spot market has slowed down a bit, but they're also just kind of sitting back because one of their biggest sources of reliable supply over the past 10, 15 years, Russia, is now sort of off the table in terms of signing new contracts. A lot of these utilities are fighting and lobbying to be able to at least receive deliveries from Russia for contracts they already signed. I think that they've made their case in the United States because it's been an exception for some of these sanctions that have come out from the United States. I don't know if they have convinced the United States government that it's a security of supply issue, that the lights will go out if they don't get those Russian deliveries. Obviously, that's not necessarily true. Other people can sell uranium. But they're sitting out because they want to see if this situation passes in terms of Russia and Russian availability. And they're also sitting out because maybe SPUT was a flash in the pan. Maybe they're going to be out of the market for a while and they can see those prices lower. I don't think they fully understand how aggressive financial players can be. So I think, that's an error in their judgment with that part, but either way, the market's pretty quiet right now.
Okay. Now, does SPUT have some stipulations on when they can purchase the uranium?
They, not when they can purchase it. They have, well, it's interesting because they have to purchase it relatively quickly when they raise cash by issuing shares, because they don't want to get tracking error if the price moves too far away from where it was when they issues those shares. So they'll get tracking error in terms of their net asset value if they raise and then they hold too much cash and the price gets away from them or the price moves down. But they do have stipulations on raising that money. Technically they don't, but they choose to not raise unless they're greater than a 1% premium to NAV, because they take a 1% fee on every uranium purchase. So if they were to issue shares at a discount to NAV, that would be dilutive to shareholders. So they don't do that, basically. And then they also they limit themselves to a certain amount of daily traded volume when they are at that premium to NAV. And John Cimpaglia said that that's 50 to 60% of daily traded volume, which is a lot. So on days where there's heavy volume into SPUT and they're above that 1% premium to NAV, if you're buying 100 shares, 50 or 60 of those shares might have been sold to you from SPUT directly through their ATM.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
But they try to buy uranium as quickly as possible. In fact, I believe the way that they do it is when they're issuing shares, they want to have line of sight for material. So they don't want to accumulate $100 million and not be able to buy any uranium. So they'll have line of sight on material as they're issuing shares.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. All right. What does SWU stand for? What is it?
SWU stands for Separative Work Unit. It's basically the cost of enrichment. It's the price that utilities will pay to have material, to have UF6, the converted uranium, enriched into enriched uranium. And that's the next to the last step. The last step is the fuel fabrication. But SWU is, that's the price that's quoted as SWU for basically the cost of enrichment.
Okay, okay. All right, can we pull up your graphs and?
Sure, what do you wanna see?
Let's start with SPUT, and okay. Then let's go into URA and URNM.
Sure. SPUT, obviously, if you look at the one thing that's interesting here for me is this decline in volume as we've been trading sideways. And we've been seeing that in a number of other equities across the space is on the ride up that we've seen over the past few days. We saw on declining volume, and that's usually not what you want to see on a rally. So it did look like, and a lot of those gains are being given back on equities across the space, and we'll see that in a second. This chart, I like to appreciate how this chart looks from a bullish perspective, I don't necessarily like to technically chart commodities, especially ones lacking in futures markets that move based on supply and demand, really. So this, despite the deep discount to NAV that we saw here and the deep and the steep premium to NAV that we saw here, for the most part, this is a graph of, this is a chart of the price of uranium, the spot price of uranium. So will we see it move down? If we go risk off again, we'll probably see another leg down here. But I don't think the price of uranium is going to steeply drop from here. So we'll probably, the reason why is because the midterm market, the long-term price of uranium right now is in the mid-50s. And the midterm market is even quoted in the low 60s by TradeTech. And so you're not going to see a hugely discounted spot price at the midterm and long-term price. If we do see another leg down here, if markets go risk off, which they kind of are today, but if that continues into the next weeks, we'll probably just see that discount to NAV grow rather than the price of uranium drop steeply. Of course, I could be wrong. There could be a motivated seller out there, but I honestly think that's probably not the case here.
Okay. So yeah, with the decreasing volume, it's like we could have a sideways consolidation going on, or maybe even it might even get a little bit cheaper.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. We might see another dip down. From a technical perspective, there's a pretty good amount of support here from that 13 to 1350 range multiple times late last year and early this year. So if we get to that down to that range for whatever reason, that in my opinion would be a load the boat type of opportunity.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I backed up the truck when it hit $10.50. And then I bought some more when I showed you the little, I'm looking to get it. Normally what I do, like with Bitcoin, I just dollar cost average that once a month I buy it. I don't care what the price is. You know what I mean? With this, I've been a little bit more technical. I'm kind of looking for, I've done, several tranches, two main ones, and I'm looking to place a third. And I'm kind of debating whether to do that sooner rather than later. So maybe I'll watch it a little bit longer. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, this is a safer bet across the entire uranium space. So, I don't see a lot of downside to this stock.
Okay. Yeah. My biggest holding is URNM, and then my second biggest is SPUT now.
So, I have an interesting chart for this one as well that I'll show you in just a second. But this one is still hanging on in within that Livermore accumulation cylinder. We're still in the higher volume blocks. Like what you want to see as we move through this cylinder is volume bumping up, and we continue to see that. So that's a positive sign. Obviously we're trading well below all of the moving averages, which is not bullish. And today we're seeing decent volume. I mean, we're 4 hours into the market. We got another 2.5 hours to go. So decent volume. Doesn't look like it's breakout volume or breakdown capitulation volume, but giving up the gains of the last 2 days, not a great look. I would have liked to see that continue through, but looks like we're still pretty bound to the broad market here. But I wanted to show you this chart. So this is URNM relative to the S&P. And so if we zoom out on this, we can see that since the Iranian bull market started, which was December of 2020, in my opinion, I mean, the absolute bottom for the equities, for many of the equities, was the March 2020 crash, but that was the bottom for basically everything.
Yeah, everything.
So I don't really gauge that as the Iranian bull market is here. Although we did have catalysts at that point with Cigar Lake coming offline due to COVID, et cetera. But the real bull market, in my opinion, was when everything took off in December of 2020, especially when the spot market was just sitting there flat. We saw volume come into the shares, and a lot of that had to do with Larry McDonald's bear traps report coming out, putting out a buy order, and it just started creating the snowball. So we have December 2020 was the breakout, and since that point, we've pretty drastically outperformed the S&P, which, you know, from March 2020 also did very well up until its highs, which was pretty much New Year's Day. So a lot of what we're seeing in the data that's saying, oh, this is the worst start of the year for the NASDAQ in its history. Well, it happened, the year started at the all-time highs. So, you know, yes, it doesn't look good, but at the same time, you have to look at it from a relative basis as well. So I highlighted this in the Market Minute and as well to Uranium Insider Pro members that every time we've reverted to this trend line, that's been a cyclical bottom for this bull run. So that started back in October, November, 2020, the big pullback that we saw in July and August. August was the low for this. July was the low for most of the equities, but they made a slightly higher low in August right before Sputz ATM went live. Then we obviously just absolutely took off on a tear. That peaked out in November. And then we slid back down and made another low in late January, early February. So we just made that low again last week. And we did this little undercut low here. Will that hold? I don't know. So far, so good. It looks like we're underperforming the S&P pretty significantly today. And the S&P is not looking good today either. So what seems to happen for uranium is outsized beta on the downside, outsized alpha on the upside. So when uranium shares are moving and the market is risk on, then we can drastically outperform the S&P. And when the broad markets go weak, we tend to underperform the S&P. And that has mainly to do with the risk off pulling funds out of SPUT and the lack of liquidity in this market on a relative basis. It's a very small market. There's a lot of small cap companies. Some of these companies have very, very low floats. We have companies like ISO Energy with maybe a 30% float, maybe 35% float. We've got SMR that just listed that has like a 15% float. So a lot of these companies either have major shareholders from, you know, like ISO NextGen owns 52% of it. So we have low floats across the space. And when they move sharply in both directions. So we could actually still hold this trend line and have the equities pull back significantly if they pull back in line with the S&P. That's a possibility. I honestly think this is going to hold. We could see another little undercut low. We could chop sideways here and move in line with the S&P. I would like to see this hold and kind of affirm that uptrend is intact relative to the S&P.
I wonder what that URNM versus the NASDAQ looks like. There we go. Oh, it's not quite as dramatic as I thought it would be, but...
Pretty similar. I'll show you one more interesting chart here, Steve. This is URNM relative to URA. So URNM is 100% pure play, uranium equities. URA is 70%. right? Mm-hmm. So they've got, they're holding Samsung and BHP and Rio and all these other companies. I mean, BHP has a little bit of uranium exposure, but so I thought this was really interesting because every time since this started, I kind of drew the continuation of this line because URNM just came to be in December of 2019. So we can't go back that far with this. But every time we've hit that 200-day moving average in this chart, it's been kind of a buy the dip opportunity. Obviously, we've lost that here. We had this steep undercut low at the end of December, and that was due to the dividend and rebalance. And then we had we kind of regained a little bit of that uptrend. That we sort of had a good move kind of mid-February through early April. Then we've been going back down. So this tends to also follow the uranium bull market trend. And you can see we've kind of been sideways since September. As far as this chart goes, we launched and we came back down. So, I don't know where my chart just went. Oh, there we go. So that's a very curious chart. Obviously, we would like to see URNM outperform URA for the reasons I've already stated. But historically speaking, this could be a decent opportunity if you have a long-term vision.
Okay. Well, that's my biggest one. There's Cameco. How are we doing?
Yeah,
I got a little bit at $20.
Yeah, Cameco is worth looking at just because it's been kind of a sector leader. It's holding up better than most. It's barely below that 200-day. The 200-day is still moving up slightly, making a higher low from January, which is positive, but still kind of breaking down here. As I mentioned, you see declining volume on this bounce that we saw over the past 4 days. Obviously not something you want to see on an uptrend. Volume's not huge today on this down, on this pullback. And honestly, pulling back here 3.5% is not a huge underperformance of the S&P at 3.3% down. That's a really nasty day for the S&P.
Oh, yeah.
So good to see Cameco. Cameco is holding up very well. And in these types of markets, you really want to be backing the leaders. At this point, and you know, I get questions sometimes, Steve, about some of these small cap companies that really haven't moved that much and have underperformed over the past number of years. And you can only go so long before you can tell yourself that the market doesn't recognize an opportunity in some of these companies. Now, if we've been in a bull market since December 2020, and there have been speculation and trading around these equities for even longer than that since the commodity bottom in 2016. But at some point, it's like, yeah, the market just doesn't know it yet. This company, they're going to hit something big, or they've got these great assets and the market just doesn't recognize it. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that happens. But at some point, you just got to recognize like something's broken here.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, yeah. The company's not moving for a reason. Management needs to do something. I don't want to name companies necessarily. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But clearly Cameco is leading here. And in my opinion, that has a lot to do with the fact that they are a clear option for Western utilities to seek out Western supply. And I think that they're going to benefit greatly from this geopolitical realignment that we're in the middle of in here.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of the things that's really cool about URNM is if you don't want to deal with like buying Cameco or Kazatomprom or something, just get that ETF and you're done.
Right.
You know?
For sure. I guess I had brought this chart up before because I drew a trend line on it. Cameco relative to URA. Okay. Clearly outperforming the index for the space, the main index for the space. I say main, URA just has the most liquidity between the ETFs, but URNM is clearly an outperformer. And URA just rebalanced Cameco, brought them down because they breached 25% of their holdings. And so, and that's a cap. They won't allow any of their holdings to go above that. So they had to rebalance it and knock it back down to 22%. Of course, the timing was perfect for URA's rebalance, which it always is. And that knocked it down here. So it happened to actually find support at that trend line, which is really interesting.
I listened to the Sprott presentation yesterday. I'm not sure if you heard it or not, but I think they said their biggest holding can be no more than 15%. Is that right?
That sounds right. Yeah, they are a smaller holding within URNM than they are in URA. So let's see that. That could be a curious chart. Yeah. So that'll show you that they're a smaller percentage of the ETF. Okay. They have outperformed since September of last year, but underperformed since its inception.
Okay.
Or roughly flat since the inception of URNM. Interesting. Yeah,
that's damn near equal right there when you connect the left to the right. Yeah. Okay.
And URNM is up huge since its inception. So it's very interesting to see that if you had bought URNM and Cameco at the same time, you would be up exactly the amount, or, you know, this the exact same amount.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Huh. Cool. Okay. What's URA look like here?
Hanging in there
to me, huh?
Hanging in there. It held the January lows, which I wanted to see. So it kind of bounced right around that same level here from that undercut low in January. Obviously the 200 days still moving up, barely starting to flatten here. We're trading well below it, still holding within that accumulation cylinder, which is positive. Still the volumes are maintaining pretty high here. That RSI was super oversold last week, almost as oversold as we saw it back in March 2020. And so, actually just as oversold as March 2020. So yeah, hanging in there, but we need to see this uptrend continue here. And I don't think it's happening if the markets stay risk off. Honestly, I think we're stuck with the risk off markets until that clears, in my opinion.
Okay. I put in I was on vacation at my brother's house in Florida last week, and I was having to do this on my phone. You know, I didn't have my computer, and I saw that URA was down at $20. I think I got it at $19 and something cents. And then I put in a limit order for where you have that second support line drawn down there.
Oh, nice.
18 something. I can't remember what it was. And maybe what I need to do is throw in some more limit orders just in case I make sure I don't miss it.
Some stink bids.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Those might get hit. They might get hit. We'll see.
You never know. Sometimes you get lucky. You know, I look at a stink bid like it probably hits 1 out of 10 times, but when it does, it's just a gift.
Yep. You know? Yeah. Yep. Cool. For sure. I like zooming out on this chart though. I really like to see. Oh, really? We're really not that far into this.
Oh man, I mean,
this has been moving down since it launched. It, unfortunately, URA launched just 6 months before Fukushima.
Yeah.
But I'd love to I love looking at that volume block come in. Just beautiful.
I do too.
And hanging out, still hanging out inside that cylinder. So we'll see if that holds. But early days. And honestly, this pullback that we've seen over the past month is like knocked us back an inning or two in this market, which is fantastic if you're excited about the long-term fundamentals.
Oh, my brother and I were just absolutely, I told you before, he got into uranium, I think about 6 months before I did. And then I started paying attention when I missed about a 30% move. And it was a lot of fun. We're like, oh my God, everything's on sale. UROY, uranium royalty. That, I thought I was getting a good deal at $4 and it went down. I snagged another one at $2.50. I was like,
man. Oh, wow. Yep.
Yeah, there it is right there. That one little candle going down. That's where I got it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
That was,
you've got some skill for buying the dip. I was honestly very surprised at how well this thing performed. It chopped along under a dollar for a good part of a year. And what did we see? We saw a 5x, almost a 5x there.
Yeah.
That was a good move. That was a good move.
Thank you. Well,
yeah.
If it goes down to a dollar, then I'll look like an idiot. But first year on in it to win it.
Yeah.
Right on. Cool. Well, thank you, Justin. This has been a lot of fun. Pleasure as always. And if you guys want to check out Justin's website, uraniuminsider.com, he comes out with a video almost every day, an update on uranium. And you're one of the channels that I really look forward to watching and following along. So thanks again, Justin. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah. Happy to chat with you anytime. Enjoyed it.
All right, man. You have a good rest of the day.
You as well. Thanks.